Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 3-4-2 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Aha, feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Dunker Nation, I love you. It's time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up, as Steve has graciously acknowledged all of our dunkers. We appreciate y'all for rocking with us. We got a fun weekend of hoops in the backseat now. The W season back in full swing. On the last episode, we kind of previewed what we would be looking forward to, what kind of storylines we were following, what questions we had for just about everyone in the league. We now have some games under the belt, so we want to talk about some of the big ones. And let's talk about some of our early observations. But first.
Wait. How good? You can fill the fine folks in about where you're at, the time you've been having, the big time you've been having.
Well, I don't know about the big time part, but I am currently in Vegas, in Las Vegas for the Aces homestand. Was at the Liberty game. We're going to talk about that one, buddy. But was at the Liberty game on Saturday. Was at the Sparks game on Sunday. We'll be at the Lynx game on Wednesday. And then I am out of here because that is a lot of Vegas. But having some fun, watch some hoops, etc.
Always out here trying to be king of the incognito, man.
Oh, here you go. I'm not doing this with you. Before we get into the basketball that we saw over the weekend, on the news front, on the NBA side, Gershon Yabusele signing a one-year, $2.1 million deal with the Philadelphia 76ers, adding to the forward room. Sixers have had quite the offseason, headlined by Paul George signing with the Crew. Yabusele had himself one heck of an Olympic run with France. Came a starter, popped on both ends of the floor. Steve, how do you feel about the fit?
Well, I mean, number one, it's good for him to see him return back to the NBA. I know he had worked towards that, and to have that Olympic run and see that actually pay off is huge. So the human portion of it is big for me. I mean, for Philadelphia, low risk, high reward, based on the moves you've made. Getting Paul George, being able to keep Kelly Oubre, getting Caleb Martin, you have shifted towards a smaller type of deal. You're going to be a smaller team. You're going to have small lineups. There's no problem with rolling the dice to see if what Yabusele has shown while he was outside the NBA will translate to your team. Can he have those drives? Can he defend multiple possessions? Will the shot be steady? If that happens, then, hey, we have another option on top of, you know, Caleb, KJ Martin. We could throw Yabusele out there. We have different pieces we can have versatility-wise that will help us out. And so at this stage of the season with their cap scenario and the way they formed this team, I see no problem with adding Yabusele to it.
Okay. I got you. Like, the three-point shooting is going to be the big thing for me, as he shot well outside of the NBA, but short of three-point line. So seeing how much of that translates back in the NBA is going to be huge. Because if that hits, I don't really have questions about the other stuff. Like, I think he has good enough ball skills to be closeouts when they come. We saw those drives pop for France during Olympic play, in particular to the defending multiple positions point that you made. I feel good about him defending threes and fours and some fives in a pinch, depending on who that five is. So if they are going to trend smaller, naturally that's going to lean towards more switching for Philadelphia. I think he should be able to hold up there. It's going to be the three-point shot for me that I'm keeping an eye on primarily. But, and to your human point, it is nice to see him come back. It's nice to kind of track the journey. You were in, you showed flashes, weren't really there. You go overseas, you pop, you shine on the biggest stage. And then you get an NBA deal right off the backs of that. And you kind of spoke to exist. Like, after the Olympics, tweeted out, like, hey, I'm ready for another opportunity. And he got one. So, like, I love that for him. And again, it's three-point shooting hits. Like, he should be a pretty valuable role player for this Philadelphia Sixers group. So excited for him. Excited to see what that's going to look like. On the W front, got a press release in the old inbox earlier today. Delta Airlines named the official airline partner of the WNBA. So more commitment to the charter program. Expanding this out. I think it's a multi-year deal now. So quick hat tip there. And then in terms of keeping up with some of the transactions, it is 7-day contract season, so we're seeing players picked up, seeing players released and then picked right back up. Crystal Dangerfield signed her third 7-day contract with the Los Angeles Sparks. Odyssey Sims, who was formerly a member of the Dallas Wings on a hardship deal, Satu Savali, Madison Ugas, they come back, so those hardship contracts had to be released. Odyssey Sims now a member of the Los Angeles Sparks. And the Phoenix Mercury picking up Monique Billings on a 7-day contract. She was also a member of the Dallas Wings before their players got healthy and thus those hardship contracts ended. Steve, any thoughts on the Ozzie Simms or Monique Billings fits in their new situations?
Well, what if I had a thought on the Crystal Dangerfield one?
You can also give a thought on the Crystal Dangerfield.
Didn't sound like it. I think obviously for the Sparks, they're looking to find guard play and looking to see what they can get as far as guard play. Can we get scoring? Can we get playmaking? Obviously with Aaron McDonald out, so they're trying to find a way to get some juice out of there. I believe Icy Simms made her debut, took 8 shots in 16 minutes, so we know she's going to get them up. Very curious to see if we do get the Ozzie Simms revenge game. They play the Wings on the 25th, which will be day 8, so we'll see if a second contract is had. And then with Monique Billings, I just think that's a really solid signing for the Mercury, especially at this stage of the game, a team that's to be able to have just a legit four. That's no disrespect to the roster, but be able to add that kind of talent at this point in the season, kind of help your rotation, you know, in game one played 23 minutes plus 16 in 23 minutes. That kind of makes sense. So I think it's going to help them being able to have small ball lineups, versatility of Billings that can also play quote unquote two bigs. So I like that move a lot for the Mercury.
Okay, I got you. We'll also add on the 7-day contract front, Jaylen Sherrod of the New York Liberty. 7-day contract ended, got another one, so she is still there. Seattle Storm, 7-day contract ended with Kiana Williams. They have not picked her back up, at least as of recording. And so we will see if that is a thing that happens, she's back, or if they use that open roster spot to bring in another bet. Again, the Storm have been linked to Gabby Williams. Not sure if that's going to be the bid. That's all going to depend on if Gabby wants to return to the W, period. But that roster spot is currently open for the Seattle Storm, so we'll keep you updated on that as that news comes in. It is, I also mentioned, it is a return for Ozzie Simms, who was formerly a member of the Los Angeles Sparks, I think, in 2017 and 2018. So cool to have her back in L.A. But to Steve's point, need more steady guard play. This is something that we talked about in the last episode of the pod. So adding Ozzie to the room, especially considering how well she played in Dallas, averaging 17 points and 6 assists there. A steady hand, someone that can get downhill, take some of the pressure off of the bigs, open up things for the bigs on top of that. So I like the fit there. And with Monique Billings, you took the words right out of my mouth. They just need an actual four on the roster that they trust. And it's nice that they can now oscillate between we can go Monique with another big, maybe go Monique at the 5. We want to stay small. But at least they aren't pigeonholed into BG at the 5 plus smaller players. They can size up now. So that versatility, I think, is going to be important as the Mercury moves forward in the season. Now, let's talk about some of these bigger matchups that happened over the weekend. Chief among them, a WNBA Finals rematch between the New York Liberty and the Las Vegas Aces. The Liberty with a 79-67 victory over the Aces in that game. The Aces come out firing, a 28-point first quarter. They're nailing every three they take, it feels like. The defense is popping. They're flowing in early offense. But you noted early on, or you notice early on, you know, in conjunction with the shot maker from the Aces, the Liberty are really trying to take away the paint. We're sinking in on these drives. We're sinking in on these post touches. You got to have to beat us from out there. And as the three-point shooting dried up for the Aces, the Liberty were able to build off of that. They were able to push a little bit off of misses. And even in a game that they didn't shoot well, they were able to control the glass. They were able to control the paint overall in this basketball game. And the Aces just could not consistently generate the types of looks that they wanted to. And it could have stood out to me just how much size the Liberty had, how much they were able to dictate things with the Aces offense. And ultimately, I just came away impressed with what the Liberty were able to do.
I think the biggest thing is this was a winnable game for the Las Vegas Aces, but the Liberty went out and took it, which is what you have to do against the Las Vegas Aces. And I think that the resiliency that the Liberty showed and the belief they showed in what they do offensively and defensively is what stood out to me. Watching it and then rewatching it, I think the Liberty stuck with it. I mean, that was a heck of a first quarter from the Las Vegas Aces at home, crowd ready to go. Team was into it, making a whole bunch of threes. That's a heck of a punch they delivered, and the Liberty were able to hold strong and stick with it. I think the biggest thing for me is the defense that stood out. I think to add on to what you said, the one area that really popped to me for New York, not just their size and length, but their activity and the switching and how that kind of impacted the Aces offense after that first quarter run. That took a lot of what the Aces were trying to do with off-ball movement off the table to a degree. If it didn't take it off the table, it got them deeper in the shot clock. And I think one thing with the Aces in that first quarter, it wasn't just that they were making threes. It was how they were generating those threes. It was a lot of drive and kick. It was a lot of good pace. It was a lot of force of Liberty to help kick out. Something we've seen before in this matchup between the Aces and Liberty. Aces drive, New York has to help, Aces kick, Aces make shots, Liberty in trouble because now Aces make the other shots too. And it didn't change the mindset from Liberty. We saw a lot of times early in the first quarter, there were drives or Asia Wilson picking and popping in the middle of the floor where there was a stunt off of a shooter. And the Aces made them pay, but also it was clear Liberty were willing to give those up. I think the switching in the second quarter from Liberty helped. The Aces couldn't quite get back to that same flow they had in the first quarter. And it's a tricky dynamic because part of the formula for the Aces is we do have a lot of talent who can make a lot of these shots that take everything you've done defensively and make it hard. It looks a little different when they aren't making those shots down. And to me, that second and third quarter was a lot of those shots aren't falling today.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's like the Liberty took it, but the Aces, if I'm the Aces, I'm probably looking and saying, hey, we left some meat on the bone in this game. I think some of the transition cross matches tended to help the Liberty sometimes, where the possession where Courtney Vandersloot just ends up on Kia Stokes. And now Kia Stokes tries to swing to Jackie Young and go screen. And the Liberty are like, aha, we can now switch back to what we wanted to do. Mm. So those kind of continued to happen. And so that's where it was kind of interesting. I thought the Aces could have executed a lot better. And they didn't hit some of the other shots. And I think the Liberty just were really, really intentional on the offensive end. They did a good job of being patient. They did a good job of executing. They did a good job of sticking with the game plan. I thought Sabrina Ionescu did a really, really good job of reading the defense and making play after play after play. And it was interesting to watch kind of the Aces try and toggle through coverages or figure out what they wanted to do. Because early in the game, it was empty side pick and roll. Okay, Asia's on John Quell. How much do we want to show? How much do we want to stay with the role? Sabrina's getting downhill. And so you had to kind of mix and match. Sabrina got loose, hit a couple threes. Sabrina was like, hey, there's space. Let me drive, get downhill. Let me just yeet up this floater or runner, however you want to call it. They kept going side to side, though. I think that's where the Liberty having that kind of confidence to stick with their offense against the Aces defense, because the Aces defense did pick up. I know they weren't happy with it by halftime, but the effort was there. The Liberty just kept making the right reads, making the right plays, and they kept putting the Aces in tough spots. You know, you'd have a good defensive possession, then it's Jackie Young switches on to Jonquel Jones. Oh, no, we need to help. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's Leonie Fubish wide open for three, skip pass. Or, oh, there's a drive, we're helping, kick. Those kind of plays. I feel like the Liberty kind of hit all the backbreakers in this one.
And I think it's something that we talked about over the weekend, or particularly like right after that game. Like, it just felt like the Liberty had an easier time generating the types of matchups they wanted, generating the types of shots they wanted. And the Aces, especially from the second quarter onward, they had to work pretty darn hard for just about everything. Like, one of the things that popped early on that first quarter showing, not just the three-point shooting for the Aces, but question that I had heading into the break was, what is Chelsea Gray going to look like in terms of the burst, just the general shot creation for her? Chelsea Gray was knocking out some tough shots early. And as things started to get away from the Aces, like, she was doing her darndest to keep the Aces afloat offensively. But to your point, it did kind of flow into the Aces becoming stagnant offensively. Liberty were able to shrink the floor. They were able to switch. And the Aces, and some Becky Hammons talked about at different points of the season, that the Aces kind of defaulting to a lot of one-on-one play, a lot of dribbling plays, some catch and hold. I'll do this. I got this. And against the Liberty defense that is as disciplined as it is, as good as it is, and again, just in terms of the physicals, like how long they are and being able to restrict space, you have to be pretty much perfect to kind of win on those tough shots. And to your point, Steve, like, they weren't able to knock those looks down from the second quarter onward. And then you get into some of those transition cross matches and literally able to kind of poke at things for the Aces early on. And it kind of leads me into a question, like, how did you feel about the matchups in general? Because I know normally I'm the person that brings up, hey, this person guarding this person, this is interesting, et cetera, et cetera. But like, how much of a role did you feel like that played into what either team was able to do in this one?
Now, Mr. Matchup Man, why are you asking me about the matchups? Well, this is your matchup.
It is, but like it popped for me early because like you mentioned, Asia defending Jonquil, like going back to last year's finals, like that felt like a later in the series adjustment versus something that the Aces just started out with. And what's been consistent in these matchups going back to last year is the Liberty want to put length on Chelsea Gray. Whoever they have put a multitude of different players on Kia Stokes. Again, going back to last year, we've seen Jonquil Jones just get the natural center matchup. And this one, we saw Breanna Stewart on Kia Stokes. We've seen Sabrina Ionescu on Kia Stokes going back to the playoffs. So the Liberty have moved things around. But I was really intrigued with the front court matchups just kind of being flipped. And I was like, huh, the Aces must really want this one, was my initial thought. Because Asia did do a good job against Jonquil last year when she got the primary matchup. So it was interesting that they started that way. But from there, I just kind of wondered how long the Aces was going to stick with it. And in relation to that, like what the Liberty wanted to do to try to counter that. And felt very early on, the Liberty recognized, okay, if we got Kia Stokes on Breanna Stewart, let's let Stewie initiate some offense. Let's let Stewie run some pick and roll. Let's see how Kia navigates. If we have a sidelines out of bounds, let's run Kia Stokes through a couple of screens off the ball. Let's see how she navigates. Let's go horns. Let's toss it into Jonquil Jones. Let's let Stewie cut off of Sabrina Ionescu. Let's see how Kia Stokes navigate. I was like, oh no, that's not the place you want to be if you're the Aces. The Liberty recognizing what the matchups are. Not only are we hunting this, we're going to poke at this. Let's see what you do about it. And we eventually saw some different matchups in the second half. I was like, that's really diligent stuff by the New York Liberty. I was impressed by. And beyond that, I guess it just kind of bleeds into the general comfort I felt like New York had on both ends, but particularly defensively, because they were able to, again, toggle their matchups. They were able to switch and flatten things out. And something that I've talked to you about before going back to last year, it just feels like with Kia Stokes, we saw a little bit with Tiffany Hayes, we've seen it with Alicia Clark, like the Liberty just feel more and more comfortable helping off certain players and further restricting space for the Aces. And it kind of bleeds into the overall Liberty winning the paint battle. It's like the Aces weren't able to access the paint as often as they wanted to. They weren't able to really force the issue at the rim in particular.
Now,
and like watching them try to...
I'm going to push back real quick.
Okay.
One, those people are going to be defended that way by default, no?
Yes, but like
it's not they're not I they're do not, kind of feel they're not Asia Wilson, Chelsea Gray, Kelsey Plummer, Jackie Young, no disrespect. So they're your help points have to be from somewhere. And that's true. This doesn't necessarily feel like it didn't feel like the type of game where the Aces just sold off of certain people. I mean, Liberty just sold out off of certain people. I think the bigger thing was the Liberty actually being able to work to contain the ball more and in a better fashion than they did in the first quarter. And not having to rely on help recover as much. And the Aces maybe relying a little bit too much on drive and kick after that first quarter and assuming that that would be there. And I think another thing is, you talk about matchups, you have to look at who the Liberty were comfortable with Sabrina guarding. They weren't sending automatic help when Sabrina was on Jackie Young. They weren't sending automatic help when Sabrina was on Kelsey Plum. She just kind of had to figure it out. And so if you did beat her and get to the past the first level, there was going to be someone waiting for you. But it wasn't necessarily what we had seen last year from the Liberty where, okay, the help's coming from the middle. We have to help from here and an easy exploit. Because that's where the Aces got them last year. Aces punished them on that once the Liberty figured out, okay, if we do this activity and we show help, we can contain these drives. We can force them to shoot threes. And the Aces said, fine, we'll shoot threes. We'll make them. And now you still can't keep us in front and you are in trouble. So I think the overall mindset to just be a little smarter with their help and let it be in the paint as opposed to helping to try and keep you out of the paint was the story to me.
Okay. I like that. I think there is a subtle difference in like the timing of the help. And to that point, as the Aces weren't able to have those easy exploits, I think that's where you saw a lot of, okay, let's string this out or let's kick this back out. And now it turns into another one-on-one situation. And it's Chelsea Gray trying to create something tough at the end of the clock. It's Kelsey Plum trying to create something tough at the end of the clock. It's Asia Wilson getting a one-on-one, and as soon as she spins into her move, now here comes more help from the Liberty, and she can't get comfortable. And so to your point, like, the Liberty just did a really good job of containing the Aces. And without those easy exploits, like, it just put the Aces in a really tough spot offensively. I would say just, like, over. Oh, what?
Well, no, I was just going to say, also that second, third quarter stretch where the second quarter was turnovers and the third quarter, they just couldn't take advantage of things. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what the transition numbers were, but it felt like every time the Aces got that stop, they would push and then it would be that turnover or they'd miss. And then they never got the avalanche that they usually can create outside of a couple of the Asia Wilson pick sixes.
Which, shout out to the Asia Wilson pick sixes. But yeah, like, there were quite a few, like, tough misses at the rim. I will say, like, as someone that was in the building, in the media section, so you can hear a little bit of the player chatter, neither side was happy with some of the things the refs were letting go and down. Like, it was a physical basketball game. And then some of those transition opportunities in particular, you get the contact on drives and the refs are like, well, that's kind of tough. Like, keep rolling. And so, like, I think that also factored into the transition offense, you know, bouncing off what you said, for the Aces not hitting as much as it could. I think, like, maybe the momentum shifts a little bit in that second or third quarter if some of those misses are free throw attempts and they're able to settle and then set their defense. Maybe the Liberty still poke at them and win those possessions on the other end. But without that, and now it's Liberty getting to play advantage basketball off of some of those trips, it felt a little bit different. It made it a little bit more difficult for the Aces to kind of find their balance, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, it honestly felt like, you know, outside of the impressive player from Liberty, you don't want to take anything away from them in that game because they made timely baskets, they made timely plays, they did what they were supposed to do. Despite, you know, Stewie didn't have the best shooting day. Jonquel didn't really have the best shooting day, although that's hard to say when she had 10, 17, and 7. She found a way to contribute. You know, Sabrina did a lot of the damage scoring-wise in the first half. They needed all of those buckets, though, and she kept at least staying aggressive in the second half. Kayla Thornton didn't feel like she was 3-for-9. But she made some big baskets, felt like she shot better. They worked through it. I think for the Aces, it just felt like they were searching, if it feels that way. You know, they missed shots. They went 0-of-9-for-3 in the second quarter. But, you know, they held the Liberty to 18 and 17 in the second and third quarter. So the defense they were looking for, they were trying to find. You know, you could hear quotes in-game from Becky Hammon, from Asia Wilson, about trying to find it and execute and be more aggressive on that end. Needing more ball movement, meaning better player movement, the physicality having to step up. They just have to kind of toggle. And so it's one of those things that's interesting because they went small like a minute and 10 seconds into the second half.
Into that third, yeah.
So it's one of those things, okay, which lineup's going to work? Which pieces are going to work together? They need to get the two bigs going. They need to get small lineup going. They need to get their pieces going. Again, this is a night where Chelsea Gray goes 5 of 12, Kelsey Plum goes 5 of 13, Jackie Young goes 1 of 8. Liberty will take that 10 times out of 10. That's not going to happen every time. And so while I understand this is probably the time to raise the hand and be like, hey, the Aces, what's going on? Is this downfall time? Here's the thing, right? Teams are working to get them. There's no doubt about that. And they're working to try and extend that window. I said earlier, now's the time to get them before Chelsea Green got back. Chelsea Green got back. We saw what they did. These teams, the Liberty, the Lynx, the Sun, the Storm, they're trying to extend that window to where the time to get you is just this season. And the Aces are working to try and get to what they know how to get to. They know where it is. They know what they have to do. They got to find it. Issue is time. And can they keep that belief? Can they keep that, not mystique, but can they keep that swagger about them to navigate a league that's trying to take them out? I would say the interesting point to me is like, okay, can we get our bench going? Can we get Elise Clark going? Can we get Keith Stokes going? It's an easy fix, but they got to find a way to get it done. No doubt. Because here's the thing about this game, Nikias. Great game from Liberty. When you beat the Aces, you tend to do what?
I tend to shoot well.
Shoot well, but
at least that's been the thing this year.
You tend to show your hand.
That's true.
Once you show your hand, you got to deal with the adjustments. And that's where, okay, well, let's talk about a playoff series. Hey, it could get interesting. But then again, for the Aces, if you're going to be like the 5 seed.
You got to work to that matchup.
Yeah.
and potentially get it early on. And I guess within that lens, like exactly what you said, like you beat the Aces, you showed their hand. The Liberty beat them earlier this year, and then you see some of the, you know, the very basic level, some of the matchup changes that we saw from the Aces. And the Liberty able to win again. And so part of my thinking is, again, not to press the big red button, the Aces are in trouble. Oh no, that's not at all what I'm trying to push out there. But through that lens, I'm just like, okay, so the Aces did something differently coming out of the break. The Liberty was still able to win this one. And zooming out between these regular season matchups, going back to last year's finals, going back to last year's regular season matchups, as you alluded to, how can we get some of the bench pieces going? How can we get Leach Clark going, et cetera? Like something that I brought up with you last year was how the Liberty are defending Alicia Clark in particular, because she has been, you know, when she got there last year, like she really put the Aces over the top. We can now go small and have someone that is comfortable defending multiple positions. She will make big shots. If you try to smash, if you try to stash a smaller player on her, she's comfortable posting them up. Timely cutter, pick and roll chemistry with Chelsea Gray, all the stuff. And seeing the Aces go small as early as they did in the third quarter, and the Liberty was just like, okay, well, that's actually fine. Like, we can just keep Jonquil out here because ultimately we want that size. Jonquil's really good, so duh, we want her out here. But even in regards to y'all going small, like, we can go Jonquil and Alicia and still keep her near the rim if we want. Or we can just toggle those front court matchups how we feel like and still feel comfortable. And that's the part where I am wondering how concerned the Aces are about that, if at all. And is the remedy just, hey, we just make more shots, it's going to be okay? Because that could just be the bit. Neither team shot well from deep in that game on Saturday. And as you alluded to in the third quarter with the Aces, like, they were able to find some decent looks and they just missed those shots. It could just be as simple as that. But as I'm thinking about just the overall margin for error for both squads and the overall comfort for both squads, it does feel like the Liberty have more buttons to press against the Aces. Even if you don't want to fully just say like they're just a better team, they're the favorites, whatever. It does feel like the Liberty have more, they have more buttons to press and they have more options to toggle through to the Aces too. And I just worry like, or wonder, with the margin shrinking, like how concerned should they be?
I have a question. Do they have more options to toggle through, or do they have more options against this specific team?
I mean, it feels like yes. Like, we've talked a lot about the added wing depth for the Liberty and the improvement some of the stars have made, stuff like that. So I think the answer is yes on that front. And I think as the Liberty have been able, when they have beaten the Aces over the last 2 years, obviously the Aces won the finals last year, but when they've been able to beat the Aces, a lot of it has been, let's bog you down, let's shrink the floor, you have to beat us from out there. When you try to go small, you better make these shots, or again, we're going to beat you up inside. If we miss shots, we're going to win the offensive glass. They won the offensive glass. They won the rebounding battle in general handedly in the game on Saturday. And so now that you're throwing more wings in the room, they do have more players to toss out against the Aces stars. Or to your point about Sabrina Ionescu just comfortably defending Jackie Young. If she's beat, we have a whole lot of different lengthy players on the back end. If they do have Jonquil, Stewie's on the bench, something like that, we have another wing to where, like, Kennedy Burke is not as good as Breonna Stewart. No one's going to argue that. But that is still another rangy player on the back end. Leone Fevich is still another rangy player on the back end. And so, like, it does feel like they have more options in general, which is why I feel like the Liberty are just better constructed this year. And, you know, going back to Saturday, it certainly popped in that game. And this was a win without Benaiah Delaney-Hamilton, who the Liberty are hoping to get back by the postseason. So I would say the answer is yes on that front.
Well, I think, and just to bounce off something you said earlier with the second half point, I think the key when the Aces went small was the Liberty put Stewie on Alicia Clark. And Stewie is very good at timing weak side help and showing help early. And the closeouts are a little different if it's Stewie coming at you. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's not such an automatic blow by. It's not such a, you know, I mean, she can kind of do two things at once in a little bit of a different way than Jonquil, which I thought helped overall. But, you know, I credit the Liberty. The responses each time, it looked like the Aces were coming. They were right there. And they, the fact that they were able to at least continue to move through their offense as the Aces tried to ramp up the physicality, as they tried to ramp up the activity, I thought that was probably the biggest key for them. defense being able to hold up, contain penetration, and defend the Aces to a degree that they hadn't before. And then offensively, we still think we can get what we want if we keep everything moving. I think that was that's where the statement was for them. Are you ready for this to be a second round series, Nikas?
Like, as a basketball fan, I hope not. I don't want that. Like, for me, if I want to see Aces Liberty in the finals again, if it's going to happen. Obviously, there are a lot of other teams that want to put their heads in that conversation. Like, hey, no, we want to get there. It's in the finals. But, like, just pure viewing experience, like, if they're going to meet up again, I want to see it in the last round. I don't want that to be a second round series. But based on where the Aces are right now,
well,
might not be.
It's a big two games. You mentioned the next opponent for the Las Vegas Aces, the Minnesota Lynx. They're currently a game and a half behind the Lynx in the standings. Pretty significant little series they're going to have right there where, hey, the Lynx, we can get some separation. All right. We can get you away from us. We can try and push for this two seed. We can make a, I'm about to make a name for myself right here. They could do that.
one tremendous shot. Two. Have you seen that movie yet? It's pretty. It's decent.
I have not seen the movie. I just saw that clip. Hence why okay, I bottled it. Anyways, and for the Aces, this is their opportunity. All right, we lost to the Liberty. Let's make a statement. Let's win these two games. We take the three seed. Now we're coming. Now all this chitter chatter seems like chitter chatter, which is what the Las Vegas Aces are pretty darn good at.
Yeah, like, and that's kind of been the thing. Like, you poked at me about this on the last episode at that point, to where, like, you have to be careful in your framing that the Aces not being as good as they were last year when they were historically good does not mean they're still not a good basketball team and one that could very well win the title again this year. And so, yeah, like, I have my questions and thoughts and some concerns. With this Liberty matchup in particular. But I personally am not pressing the it's cooked button for the Aces. And I'm not sure anyone should be pressing that button. But this is impressive so far for Liberty.
I can't get there. I think the defense does have to be at a certain level if they want to hit the right heights. But if they get the defense to that level, really hard to deal with them. Really hard to deal with that talent. That guard room, Asia Wilson playing at this level, it's just very difficult to beat that team. And so while I acknowledge the Liberty have worked their tail off, the Sun have made another move to say, hey, we can do this. The Lynx have beaten the Aces. The Storm have competed and feel like they can compete against the Aces. The Mercury. Actually, you know what? I was going to ask you this question. Because do you think all five of the other teams in the top six, that locker room believes they can beat the Aces? And is that just the difference for this year?
I think that could be part of it. I know, like, you've talked about this on the pod this season. I know the Mercury feel like they could do it. Mm-hmm. Again, that's not our opinion on if they actually can or will. But I know in terms of just general feeling, like, I know the Mercury feel like they can. I know the Storm feel like they can. Or at the very least, the Storm feel like they can defend this group. The Sun certainly feel like they can defend this group. The Liberty have, they continue to beat this group now in the regular season context. Again, we'll see what happens in the postseason. I guess the Lynx is where it gets interesting. Again, just they're competitive and they're athletes. So yes, they believe they can do so.
Dang, the disrespect.
No, disrespect. You're not going to get me on this, man. The Minnesota Lynx believe they can do it. Mm. The Lynx feel like Lynx feel like they can beat anybody. And so, yeah, well, I think that could be the difference. And again, you go with some of the slippage that we've seen from the Aces this year. Like, they haven't shot at the same level. They certainly haven't defended at the same level. I've talked about that a lot on the pod throughout the year. The drive containment and the discipline on closeouts just has not been at the same level as it was last year. And so not only is that belief there, like, it has been, generally speaking, it's been a little bit easier to get the Aces. Because you haven't dealt with the same avalanche of shots in transition play. And they haven't been able to get the same stop, so they haven't been able to get out and transition as much. And so it just feels different. Like, to your overarching now's the time to get him point. This is certainly the best season to do so, if you're going to do it. Because you're thinking about, like, there is just a collective mileage that you have to consider with this Aces group. They're going for their third title in a row. Like, these have been extra playoff games, longer seasons, etc. You got the Olympics in here where you had six different Aces participating. Chelsea Gray missed the first portion of the season. Jackie Young missed a little bit of time. Like, it's, if you're going, like, this is the ideal setup for someone else to come through. And I think if that's the case, like, I think the Liberty should be favored. They are the best team in W right now in terms of the standings. They are the best offense in the league. Really good defense. So if anyone's going to do it, like, that's there.
They're the best what in the league?
They are the best team in the league right now.
No, the best offense?
Oh, they are the best offense in the league.
Oh, okay. I hadn't heard that in a while from you. Just wanted to double check and see if my hearing was good. I mean, we're doing all this, but the Aces are 9-6 at home. They lost six home games the last 2 years combined. That just
big shit.
They're 8-3 on the road, so it's not like they're still very good. It's just we'll see how the end of the season stretch goes. It's a lot of Aces Liberty talk. It's a good game though. Love watching them play. Love watching them play.
Indeed. Also, just funny on a general note to watch again four Aces, couple of Liberty players on the Team USA squad, and then immediately, hey, we face each other on Saturday.
Yeah, they got all them daps out the way.
All the pictures and stuff. Yeah. It's a cool bit. Any closing thoughts on this one before we move?
Nah, we can keep pushing. It's going to be interesting to see what that looks like in the playoffs. I'll put it that way.
Gotcha. All right, well, transitioning away from that one, we did have another big game with playoff implications on Sunday. The Indiana Fever defeating the Seattle Storm 92-75, a game that got away from the Storm in the fourth quarter / the Fever just took it in the fourth quarter beyond some ridiculous three-point shooting. I think, what was it, 8 of 10 from 3 before starters were pulled in that one. And there was a little bit of hashtag stuff in regards to when the starters were pulled, what it looked like. So, at any rate, 23 points and 9 assists for Caitlin Clark. She officially set the WNBA rookie record for assists in a season. And naturally, that assist was a transition dot that she hits Kelsey Mitchell on. Kelsey Mitchell takes some contact, knocks down the layup anyway. And there you go. Only fitting that it came in that way. But a heck of a win for the Indiana Fever. Like, we were talking about it as the game was going on, but, like, the defense for both teams felt good early. Fever felt more disciplined, continued to lean into the switching. The scram switching was clean when it got to it. With Seattle, you saw them mix in their own level of switching to see what the Fever would do with it. They ramped up pressure against Caitlin Clark, as Seattle has been a blitz-heavy pick-and-roll defense, at least comparatively to everyone else in the league. We saw that ramped up. But then we saw the Fever get more comfortable offensively. We saw Caitlin Clark get more comfortable against those blitzes. Let's get it out to Aaliyah Boston. Only Aaliyah Boston felt like made the right decision just about every time she got the ball in space. 8 assists for her, but that doesn't even tell the full story of, again, just not only her making the right read, but making the right read quickly. And, like, seeing her diagnose defenses in that way, or diagnose Seattle's defense in that way, and then just compare that to what it looked like early in the year, to where she was trying to figure out where to find her pockets, when to screen and release, where she's releasing to, what my outlet is going to be, where do I need to hit them? When is it my turn to be aggressive in the short role? To see where she was at the beginning of the year, to see where she is now, is outstanding in-season growth. And to watch Caitlin and Aaliyah work and pick a role in general is just a lot of fun right now and very effective. The numbers back that out. So you have Caitlin look good, Aaliyah look good, not a heavy scoring game for her, but she filled gaps literally everywhere else. Kelsey Mitchell got busy in transition, but also knocked down all kinds of threes. And speaking of threes, Lexi Hull with 22 points off the bench, setting her career high. She went 6-7 from deep. And you zoom out, and it is another win against the playoff team for the Indiana Fever, and they keep stacking these up. But no, just impressive stuff for the Indiana Fever in this game against the Storm.
Well, as I was going to mention, they have their last 6 of their last 9 wins. They've won 6 of their last 9. Those wins against the Mercury, the Liberty, the Mercury, the Lynx, the Mercury, and the Storm. I think to your defense point, Indiana has been more focused on that end. And I think it's not just, you know, just switching. I think Aaliyah Boston deserves a lot of credit for the work that she has done in pick and roll, as far as just being able to be near the level of a screen and knowing when she has to commit to containing that penetration, when she has to go to a late switch, and when she has to recover. That makes a world of difference for the Fever. I think their guards are working a lot harder to try and contain penetration. Even if they're getting beat, they're sliding their feet, hands up in the air, working to stay in front. That's lessening the need for Indiana to overhelp at times. And you're seeing more committed help, more solid help, more well-timed help, more we're in and pick and roll, we get back out type of plays, and just getting solid on that end. So, but I think Aaliyah Boston deserves a lot of credit for that, because what she's doing is very subtle and it helps their base be stronger. And I think that's a really big key for Indiana. If they can play defense at a level, just be okay. Like, they don't need to be world beaters defensively. It's got to be okay. We just got to get out of our own way. We got to stop overhelping, stop handing you exploits, stop handing you plays, stop handing you passes that we weren't actually there because we thought we had to help. Just be solid. You give yourself a chance. You get stops. You get out and run. Caitlin Clark's able to throw the ball ahead. You run. You get easy points. You set your defense back up. It's a good formula for you. The other part about this game for the Fever was they had to figure it out. Like, this was a Seattle team that was ready to play defense, that was physical, that was active, throwing different coverages at Caitlin Clark, whether it was the drop or turning up traps every now and then, working to cut off penetration. It was a gutty-gritty game. But I think that's where the work that the Fever have done over the course of the season started to pay off, because you saw that ball movement. You saw that belief. You saw that understanding. Like, I think there was a play in the third quarter where Caitlin Clark's pushing the ball. Like, it's not even in transition. Like, she just was bringing it up. Oh, wait, Kelsey Mitchell's open. They swing it to Katie Lou. Miss. Aaliyah Boston gets a rebound. Hey, Caitlin Clark, you're wide open. Caitlin Clark gets it, makes a three. And it's like those type of rhythm plays, that's just a team effort type deal. That's not necessarily drawn up. I thought Caitlin Clark did a really good job of managing the storm, no pun intended, and handling and just kind of just creating, playmaking, finding the comfort with the drive that's been there all season long. But okay, pick and roll's an adventure. Let me go ahead and hit a couple drives real quick. Let me get a drive and finish. Let me get a drive, force help, and get a kick. And now Seattle might be in rotation. Let me, you know, in pick and roll, mix in these rejects. So now, hey, you're ready to put two on the ball, whatever your coverage is going to be. I'm rejecting the other way. I can get my same read, or I can get a kick to someone else, or I can get all the way to the basket. Also reading when Seattle committed to her in pick and roll and knowing, okay, the big is somewhere. I'm finding them, and we're going to keep playing basketball. You know, the one play where she picked up the dribble and was like, hey, Aaliyah Boston, I know you're over there somewhere. Let me find it. That was really important. I think the way that they've integrated Caitlin Clark and Kelsey Mitchell together has been very good, to where they're both in rhythm and they're both comfortable. I think they've scored 20-plus in two games in a row, for sure, out of the Olympic break. Possibly three, if I can recall correctly. But this is where now we can get to some real side-to-side action. Now Kelsey Mitchell's comfortable playing in her way within what the Fever want to do. And if we don't have something on one side, we flow to the second side. Now it's Kelsey Mitchell getting downhill and attacking, and we can keep pressure on you that way. We can keep Aaliyah Boston involved. It's just really good. And I think the other thing is just the rotation is the rotation. This is something we talked about, I think, before the Olympic break. They settled in. This is our eight. This is who we're playing. This is what we're doing. You know what your minutes are going to be. If different scenarios pop up, we have different options for it, but these are people playing. You saw Lexi Ho play with a lot of confidence in that game. We knew the energy that she's brought to the Fever, but, you know, it's not going to be that every single game. But the fact that that's in there is a positive sign for the Indiana Fever, because if you're going to be able to knock down corner threes and Indiana's going to be in a position where they can generate that shot very often, that's a positive. I mean, that they've been able to generate quality shots a lot. The key is now, can they make defense pay? You see what happens when they do.
Mm-hmm. Which I got a good chuckle in that fourth quarter, where I think Lexi Hole made like two straight corner threes, and there was an opportunity for a third one. If she got a swing from Demiris Dantas, and Demiris like, well, actually, it's my turn to shoot. And it did not go down. It's like, that is not necessarily reading the moment there. But to your point, nice. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, speaking of reading the moment, Ezzie Nabigard was reading everything. As far as when you wanted to come in the paint.
Whoo, buddy.
Anyways, continue.
She is... she is a phenomenal defender. And watching her weak side rim protection, a transition block. Oh, that's a nice post up you got there. I'm actually just going to swat this as you try to turn around and go for a shot. I've just really enjoyed watching Ezzie play this year. She's been great defensively. She is a, you know, barring injury and games play stuff, but like she is a lot for all defense this year. I think she should factor pretty heavily into defensive player of the year conversation. Ezzie's been that good. And that's before getting into some of the fun stuff she's done offensively. But to your point, like it was a nice game for Lexi to have. Obviously, the point total of 3-pointers being made, that pops in the box score. And it was a career high scoring game for her. But you spoke to the confidence that she played with. Because you've seen it at different pockets this year, beyond the 3-point shooting, to where, I mean, the defense is important. Flying in for a timely rebound, the cutting. Like she, you see these flashes of, I could just make an impact here and there. And I can help this team for a lift in this short spurt or whatever. And for her to get like an extended run, and the shot making, of course, aided in that. But to see her do a little bit of everything, it's just a lot of fun for me to watch. And if Lexi's going to be a mainstay of the rotation, like I do think that helps the defense. That has been a bit of an issue for the Fever if we just zoom out to the season at large. I think they're getting more comfortable with what they want to do as the season's going on. But I think having more Lexi and having that kind of perimeter defense certainly helps. And now if everyone's able to settle into roles, I think it makes it a little bit easier for people to produce. If Lexi knows where her minutes are coming from, she knows what she needs to do. If it is going to be Demiris Dantas as your backup big, I know I can space at the five. I can make these passes, get invert offense when necessary. That's what I need to do. Melissa Smith, I know where my shots are coming from when playing off of the four. And when we do transition into more bench lineups, I know what I need to do. We've talked already about Caitlin Clark's growing comfort this year. Kelsey, you just touched on Kelsey Mitchell's growing comfort this year. Aaliyah Boston's growing comfort this year. It's just a young and fun Fever team that is finding itself on both ends of the floor. And the fact that they are stacking these kinds of wins as a result is pretty impressive stuff.
Well, they're two games out of the sixth seed right now. And everyone's favorite Indiana Fever subject, rest and practice, is right around the corner. They don't play until Saturday, August 24th. But, buddy, this is a very important five games. That'll be a very important little 7-8 days for the Indiana Fever. They go at Minnesota, at a rejuvenated, renewed Atlanta Dream. So you can't just wink, wink, nudge that one anymore. Not the way that Ryan Howard's playing. They face the Connecticut Sun at home, which, newsflash, has not been a fun matchup for the Indiana Fever this season. They go to Chicago for it doesn't matter. That's just been a very close game no matter what, and people have been very normal online about it after. And then they go to Dallas, which, you know, the Wings record is the Wings record. That still is Arike Ogunbowale and Satu Sabally. After that, after that, they have six out of the last seven at home, but they got to get through that next five.
They can get through the gauntlet. They're in pretty good shape if they're able to get through that five. If they can go, they go 2-3 in that stretch, considering where the other teams in their standing range is. If they go 2-3 there. In pretty good shape heading into that home stretch. If they go 3-2 or 4-1, and they're able to build off of what we're seeing so far post break, or even, you know, zooming out to like that July stretch before going into the break, continue to expound on that. It's a really good team. Very quickly, like it feels like the Fever in the Sky have played like 12 times already. Like maybe that's just like the discourse buffer, but goodness gracious, that should be a fun one.
It's because they played three times in June.
And they were all weekend games, weren't they?
Yes.
Like they were all Saturday or Sunday.
Yes.
And set your darn clock and calendar to Fever Sky and hashtag discourse. Very cool. But a very quick stat on the Caitlin Aaliyah front. 22 pick and rolls between the two per second spectrum in that game against the Storm. 1.3 points per possession on any trip featuring a Caitlin Aaliyah pick and roll. Easily the most success that they have had against the Storm this season. And then in direct plays, Caitlin shoots, Aaliyah shoots, or just a kick to the perimeter and an immediate shot. 1.6 points per possession. Insane production, insane efficiency when those two hooked up. And again, it's kind of cool just to put a number on how good those two have looked together and how much they've grown from the beginning of the season. They are one of the most dynamic pick and roll tandems in the W already. And it's only going to get better. So impressive stuff for the Fever. Any Storm concerns pop for you in that game? Or was it just an element of the Fever figuring it out, making shots?
I feel like you've asked me this Storm concerns question 17 times this year. And here's the thing, right? I think the Seattle Storm are a very talented team. I think the Seattle Storm are in year one of this group, and they're trying to figure it out. I think the defense, the effort, the activity was there. I think sometimes they overhelped and held too long on that help, and that opened up shots for the Indiana Fever. I think they didn't necessarily have a decisive coverage they wanted to just use on Caitlin Clark, slash she was able to poke at all of them, to her credit. And I just think offensively, it's about moving the ball for them and understanding how to get that ball movement and that flow and have that ball not stick at times, and how to continue to play with pace and tempo to where, okay, we run a pick and roll with Skylar and NECA with 18 on the clock. There's nothing there. There's 15 on the clock. What is our next thing? What's our next option? Are we going from side to side? Are we waiting? Are we holding? Are we going one-on-one? Are we waiting for a screen? Those are the type of plays that the Storm have to figure out. You have to take your lumps. And they got to figure out how to do it on the road. So you have this game against the Dream. You have this game against the Fever. You scored, 70s in each of them. Okay, something is not traveling with us offensively. And in those scenarios, your defense can only do so much because your offense is not holding up the end of the bargain. So you're working your tail off defensively. But is it turning into transition points? If it's not turning into transition points, you're in a half-court battle. In the half court battle, are you consistently executing? Are you getting the shots that you want? How are you using your talent together? You know, we've seen them do a great job of inverting their talent and being able to use NECA Ogunmike off pin downs and handoffs, Ezzy Mabigor off pin downs and handoffs, use Skylar and Jewel as screeners or let them operate. But are we going to go 18 on the clock, Jewel Lloyd drag screen? Now what? NECA's looking for Skylar, 15 on the clock. Now what? What are we waiting for? What's the next thing? So are they going to have that consistent pop that keeps pressure on teams? Or are they going to hope their talent carries them through those stretches? That's just something you have to learn. Like, it's the same thing I felt about the Liberty in year one. They had to figure it out. Now, they had Brianna Stewart having a season that was insane to where you didn't necessarily feel it like you do with the Storm, because it was a Stewie save us, and Stewie was like, bet, and she did, and they won, and they moved on. The Storm haven't necessarily had that for the majority of the season, shooting wise. And so figure it out on the road, figure out your offense. These are just normal bumps in the ground in year one.
Okay. Understood. Figured out what toss that
was. Do you have any concerns about the Seattle Storm? Can I ask you, or are you just going to say shooting?
Well, I do think it is helpful if you can knock down shots from the perimeter, can loosen up some things for those drives and for those post-ups. And then it's just general rotation stuff. Just when do they want to go with Sammy as the fifth? Stuff like that. But other than that, I'm like with you. Like, it's year one. It's not like they have like another major move. Like trade. We're recording on a Monday. Trade deadline is technically tomorrow. It's not like they can swing for another star or something like that tomorrow and shift their offensive profile in a major way. So I think it's just going to be reps, half court connectivity, to your point. So, and we'll see how many of the shots fall on the perimeter. I hope that didn't disappoint, dear friend.
You good.
Okay, there we go. We did it. Any closing thoughts from Fever Storm before we move?
No.
Okay, fair enough. Well, then, quick question for you.
What's up?
Can we get the Chicago Sky very far away from the Phoenix Mercury?
Hey, man, I don't know what they did. I don't know what happened. I don't know how much of it is cop fueled. I don't know what's going on. But we've seen the Phoenix Mercury and the Chicago Sky play, twice over the span of, 4 days? And neither time the Phoenix Mercury felt like being friendly at all. Brittany Griner establishing post-ups and hey, Camila Cardoso, come here, please. Let's have a chat. Here's the thing. They played Thursday. They played Sunday. Thursday, the Mercury won 85-65 in Chicago. Sunday, the Mercury won 86-68 in Phoenix. They just did the same thing.
like, going back to the Thursday game, like, Ka arriving in the Sky jersey should have just set off all the alarm bells that, hey, this was not going to be a good time for the Chicago Sky. And she lit it up into the BG point. I tweeted out, it had to be like 2 minutes into the first quarter of that game on Thursday. Hey, Chicago might want to send some double teams on BG. And I know it's not always as easy, you know, it's a lot easier said than done. I'm on my couch. A real coaching staff is doing real work. And on top of that, doubling BG means leaving one of or potentially leaving open a Kalia Copper or a Diana Taurasi, depending on what the ball moves going to look like. So it's not just a double team, we win on defense. Never be that simple. But BG kicking off that game with an and one and just continuing to get to her spots and raise up. And if the help came late, she's just shooting over the top. It's just like, yo, you can't let BG get comfortable that early and that quickly. It just got tough.
Now, here's the thing. The toughest part is, one, Ka went off in the first game against Chicago. 12-19, 29 points. Second game, 2 of 11. But that's why they call Donia Taurasi the GOAT.
Because DT had it for him, bro.
Hit a deep three to start. 23 points plus 18 in 30 minutes. 9 free throw attempts. Made all 9 of them. That's how you do it. I think the Mercury and their ability, one, hey, Natasha Cloud, you guard Angel Reese. How do you guys want to handle that portion of the program? Do you guys want to spam post-ups? Do you want to space her, see if she's going to drive? Number two, okay, this is a lot of Kennedy Carter because the offense needs a lot of Kennedy Carter, but this is a lot of Kennedy Carter. And Kalia was like, eh, I mean, this is fine. I'll contest. And then the switching that the Mercury were able to do and the timing of the switching just did not necessarily help what the Fever wanted to do. It's a tough matchup because Brittany Griner can very comfortably be like, I'm in a drop. You can navigate all this space that I'm giving you, my teammate, but I'm back here. So if they somehow beat that space, I'll be here for you. But I'm not going any further than that because they're going to have to make us pay. And unfortunately for the Sky, they just weren't able to make them pay. 35% from the field. They made as many threes as we did.
Yeah.
I mean, Angel Reese, 19 points, 20 rebounds. That's not easy to do. I would like for people to stop discounting what Angel Reese does. Like, there's 20 rebound games just don't grow on trees. Like, you don't just get 10 offensive rebounds by on accident. Like, just can we not do that?
I was going to say, like, very quickly, like, we talked about Caitlin Clark setting the assist record, or the rookie assist record, excuse me. And, like, Angel's closing in on the double-double record. Like, she's flirting with not just the rebound lead in the W, but that would also just be a rebounding record for a W season in terms of rebounds per game. No, it's not easy to do that. Like, one, it's not that easy to grab that many boards. Two, just generally as a rookie, you have to be pretty darn good to warrant the minutes to be able to grab those kind of rebounds. Like, her being in position to do this at all is a testament to how good and how reliable she's been. But we got to do discourse, so it's not.
No, we don't have to. I mean, we don't have to do that. I don't have to listen to that. Here's the thing. You ever been in a restaurant, guys? You ever gone to a barbecue place? You take a big bite of brisket, right? Mm-hmm. At any point did you go, man, I tell you what, that sausage got nothing on this brisket. No, you just enjoyed the brisket. Just enjoy the brisket. Just, you don't. Why do we?
But no, you're exactly right. It's just we don't have to do that. It's just like you can find your pockets. Like I feel like we've done a fair job of talking about the growth that all these rookies would make without it being inflammatory. I don't think it's not difficult to talk basketball if you just watch and talk about basketball. You know what I mean?
They just be that. They're fun. They're fun to watch. They're fun to watch. And the Mercury continue to just be a mystery, man. They're just an absolute mystery. 9-4 at home, 6-9 on the road, 2.5 games behind Seattle for 5, 2 games ahead of Indiana for 7. I mean, for 6. What do you want me to do? Like, I don't know. They play the Dream twice this week, Nikias.
Can get funny.
That is going to be a fascinating series because I did mention they are 2 up on the Fever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're five ahead of the Dream. So it's probably the sky signing that more than anything. But I don't. Then they play a homestand like we talked about before. So it's just like, I don't know how to toggle the Mercury switch. Like, I think they're good. They compete. They play hard. They believe. Monique Billings helps them. They're not going to go away. And then they have nights where they just absolutely don't have it, can't make a shot, and they don't look very good. And then as soon as you say, boy, Mercury's struggling, guess what? Belief dog threes.
Then they beat a good team. It's like, oh, well, I guess they can do that. Can I toss a thought / free throw / question at you?
Yeah, what's up, man?
As you have been flummoxed by the Mercury all year long, are the Mercury just this year's wings for you?
No, I believe in the Mercury. I just don't know if they can hit their high notes all the time. / on the road.
Got you. I feel like, you know,
I believed in the wings last year, too. There was only one of us who had severe question marks about the Dallas Wings.
Well, they were two different teams. It was like, hey, this defense is great. What's going on with the offense? And then, wow, this offense is great. What's going on with the defense? And, you know, I'm just waiting on the mesh. But no, I was just thinking about in the context of like our pod doing W stuff, is like the Dream and the Wings were always the teams like, I don't know what version of the team I'm going to get this year or this week or whatever the case may be. And it feels like it's been a lot of that with the Mercury with you. Like, you see where they are good, and then it's like the road stuff, and it's like, well,
this is much more jazz music stops than anything else. Mm-hmm. You know, this is like when you do your set routine, you wake up and you grumpy, and it's like, wait a minute, I did everything I was supposed to do. That's not how this is supposed to work. The Dream have done enough of that portion of the program for all parties involved. I'm not going to lie to you.
That's fair. And so in Dream fashion, two wins over playoff teams over the weekend. It would appear that having Ryan Howard and having Jordan Canada is helpful for your basketball team. Also, when Tina Charles plays well, that also helps your basketball team. Was it 16-7 in a game winner against Seattle in that revenge game? And then 22-15 against the Connecticut Sun on Sunday? I tell you what, some impressive stuff from the Atlanta Dream.
So what do you think of the Dream, man?
Well, Steve, to be honest with you, I'm still trying to figure that portion out, because I've been saying for most of the year, like, I just want to see this team healthy so I can see what it looks like. It's very easy to see why the offense is bad, because teams can just duck under or switch against all their stuff, and then we just help on these post-ups. And since y'all are playing a lot slower than last year, if we take this away, what y'all got, who's getting to the rim, et cetera. And so, like, naturally getting Ryan back, consistently getting Jordan back, the rim pressure feels better. Like, you get more timely drives. And Jordan's been really good in that regard. Even when some of the slower possessions are there and things break down, the fact that Jordan can, with 9 on the clock, let me just beat my player off the dribble, and I either get a shot, I get to this mid-range jumper, get all the way to the rim, or I draw help, and now here's the catch-and-shoot opportunity. Like, those weren't there in abundance for Atlanta early in the year. So that helps. I still kind of feel weird about the offensive balance for them. Because, like, the pace thing has just been interesting to me all year long. Because I got the argument for playing slower to make sure that they are actually running stuff. Because, like, I don't know if the full, not necessarily Coach Budenholzer-esque thing, but, like, I don't know if the full, hey, let's play some flow really worked for them last year. Especially as teams started switching more against them. But I feel like there's a middle ground between, like, where they were last year and what they're doing this year. So I'm waiting on them to find that. And I think being healthier and having their better players available should help in that regard. So I do just want to see a larger sample of the healthy group. And then defensively, like, continue to commit to splitting up Tina Charles and Cheyenne Parker-Tyers, which I hope Cheyenne's okay. Before you can get into more basketball analysis. Nasty ankle turn. At least she grabbed the ankle. It was ankle foot area. She fell down, did not return in that Sun game on Sunday. So I hope she's okay. But like fully committing to splitting those two up, not playing them together as much, being able to sprinkle in, you know, starting Nas Hillman, you're still able to sprinkle in Nia Coffey at the four if you want. Easier for them to find some stuff defensively, as that's been more of their identity. But Do I have firm belief in the Atlanta Dream? Not yet. I want to see more. But this weekend was a good start, or post-break was a good start.
They beat the Seattle Storm and the Connecticut Sun. And you need to see more?
I do.
I gotta be the dream believer here? Now, here's the thing. I'll issue,
you can if you want.
I'll issue a...
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, even in the beginning, they beat the Aces this year, and they were still not good.
Well, here's the thing. Their whole team fell apart, bud.
That's true, but I'm just saying.
You can't gloss over that part of the program.
I'm just saying.
Well,
I can't press the button.
You need to also say that part. And also, there's only so much time left in the season. They're either going to show it or they're not. I think the one thing with the Dream, and I'll give you a live challenge, I don't know how many times they had four players in double figures leading up to this. They had it in both games against the Sun and the Storm. And being able to have that kind of balance and be able to lean on each other to where Ryan Howard can have that big game against Seattle. Jordan Canada can have impactful, with assists in both those games. Tina Charles can show up in different ways. Alicia Gray can still be herself and kind of slide in. That's a positive. So you have a little bit of a hierarchy. I think the biggest thing for Atlanta is just finding their flow. Drive and kick helps. And I think that's where Jordan Canada really helps this team, as far as I can put my head down, I can get in the paint, I can make a play. If we run our first action, now I can get my head down and I can keep us going. The only problem is they don't necessarily do it all the time. And they're heavy into, okay, we did our first action, now what? Or we didn't necessarily execute the action we were supposed to, now we're trying to get back to it, now what? And then when they try and go to drive and kick, it's cool until you pass up shots you should take, or your drives are not forcing help. And so when you combine that with the possessions where stop, wait for a screen, stop going one-on-one, or stop throwing the post, that's where it sometimes can get a little jagged, because they have some nice movement sets. We've seen it. I mean, they started the Sun game with good flex action for Ryan Howard. She slips out, gets a dribble handoff, comes off screen, knocks it right down. They'll put that in there, staggers for Alicia Gray and Ryan Howard at the same time. The only they forget the second stagger, and then it's an illegal screen call. And then it's like, okay, let's not do that. And then they'll just throw it in the post like four or five times in a row. And then that'll work maybe two out of five times. And it's like, well, let's do something else. Pick and roll. Okay. Now what? So it's just the consistency for the Dream, I think, is something that they just need to continue to work on and move forward with. Because the problem is, if you're running 10 seconds of movement for the post up, teams are kind of sitting on that. And if your movement sets aren't hitting the same they are, you don't necessarily have the same playbook rotation that you could have. But I was impressed by both games. I mean, it wasn't like they were pretty. Connecticut was on their tail in that one. The Storm were on that tail. They were able to gut those out against really good teams. I think that's important. Can you build belief at this portion of the season? Can you build an understanding? Ryan Howard playing at this level, and she give you buckets however you want. She helps open up the playbook, in all honesty, because you can use her off ball, off flares, off staggers. You can use her as a cutter. You can use her in pick and roll. That's a plus. So I like that at least we're able to see the Atlanta Dream. I like that in the second half of the season, we're able to see these teams. Like, the Washington Mystics didn't win a game against the Lynx, but it's nice to see the Washington Mystics return to playing defense and having Shakir Austin out there and Brittany Sykes flying around, Stephanie Dolson still shooting threes. Like, it's good to see that. Dallas, we've only seen it one game, and that one game did not particularly go great. But it was nice to see Satu Sabli back out there with Arike and Maddie Seegers on the way back. It's just nice to have the quote-unquote bottom of the league look a little different. And so, while the results may not come, these are not layups anymore. Not that they were before, but these are not just going to be easy, handed to you type games. So the Dream, hey, here's the thing. The Dream put themselves in a position. They're a game and a half behind the Chicago Sky for the 8th seed.
It could get dicey.
So they have something to play for.
That they do. I just a little concerned about Chicago. It's like, I mean, the offense has been what the offense has been all year long. And this was pre-Marina trade, and now Marina's not there. That first game coming out of the break, they didn't have Kennedy Carter with a non-COVID illness. And so naturally, it's going to be even tougher for them scoring that one. But man, it just feels so... it feels so difficult for them to generate clean stuff against good defenses. And so I just, you know, we will see what it looks like this week. But I worry about them, especially in relation to Atlanta coming off these two big wins and now only a game and a half back. Well, we could hit the pod Thursday or the pod next Monday, or I guess next Tuesday when you guys hear the next next week's episode. We might get here next Tuesday and the Dreamer in 8. And it's like, oh no, what happened here? So worth keeping an eye on it. As far as other things from the weekend, was there anything or any player that popped for you?
Yeah, sunny days in Connecticut. Marina Mabry delivering a little sunshine. Very funny two-game sample for Marina Mabry and the Connecticut Sun, where Nikias, when we last left off on this podcast, and you also put it on your well-valued thread on Twitter, how is Marina Mabry going to be integrated? How that going to work? And then they scored 50 points in the first half against Dallas Wings. And had, what was the offensive rating they had with Marina in that game?
I think it was a thing in that first half. It was 50 points, a 111.1 offensive rating, I believe is what it was in that first half.
Interesting.
It was one of the most efficient first halves of the season.
Huh.
I was like, what?
It's almost like, if only. And then you have the second game, which the Connecticut Sun started the game 1 of 7 with 2 points. With 6 minutes and it was through 6 minutes and 3 seconds of the first quarter. So the duality of the Connecticut Sun. I think Marina is a big plus. I think she showcased that over this two-game sample. Did not shoot the ball well in Atlanta. I think that's something that she and Connecticut will have to adjust to. On the one side, it is a plus to have a guard who is willing to take those shots. On the other side, you have to be willing to live with the guard that is willing to take those shots. It's just, it's part of how it goes. I think that the fact that you can use her in different ways is really going to help. I think you could see the playbook being opened up a little bit. I think the fact that Marina Mabry was playing so much in that Dallas game, I was like, man, she's playing a lot of minutes. You could tell, okay, tying together a few of these lineups in a different way. I think she helps their pace, helps their flow. I think an underrated portion for Connecticut, if you have 4 people out there that can push and transition when you get stops, that's a big plus for them. I think it was just good to kind of see them open up the playbook. You know, let's run elbow action. Let's get Marina Mabry off a dribble handoff. And a lot of teams against Connecticut, it's automatic. Hey, we're just going to slide under. Well, if you slide under against Marina, it's going right up. Using, you know, double drag with Marina Mabry as a screener. The times where Marina Mabry was screening for Alyssa Thomas, they go inverted. Like, I thought there was a lot of good stuff they tapped into. I think they're going to have to figure out which combinations work the best. And then, especially, let's say hypothetically, that first unit's going to be Marina, Dejanay, DeWanna Bonner, Alyssa Thomas, and Bree Jones. I don't think, because of the way they work their offense and the sets they run, I don't necessarily think this will be an issue, if this makes sense. But it's just, okay, how do we know how to play off each other? Because Marina's aggression is one thing. You need Dejanay's aggression to be there, and DeWanna's going to be aggressive. We know this for sure. The thing you want to make sure it is cohesive to where Dejanay or Marina's aggression isn't, hey, I haven't shot in a couple minutes. Not that it was, but you just want to avoid that zone. So, okay, how can we now get to drive and kick? Can we play faster? We have screens on both sides. Is it a switch because it's two guards on one side? Are we waiting for a post up? You know, because they're going to need Dejanay's drives. They're going to need DeWanna in every facet. They're going to need Marina's offense. So it's just kind of bringing that group together. I think Ty Harris, if she settles on as being off the bench, will help. Because obviously, okay, I can come in and do my job. And then I can also balance out some lineups. We can close with whoever's hot. But I thought Marina did a lot of good stuff. And I think that's going to help Connecticut. I see the vision. I saw the vision. Hopefully some more people see it. But that's going to be a big boost for them offensively.
I like it. Any other players or teams?
Damn, I had nothing to say about Connecticut or Marina Mabry. That's hysterical.
No, no, I do.
That man, Eurostepped again. Had nothing to say. All right, man.
Shout out
to the Minnesota Lynx. I thought that was a very important two-game set against the Washington Mystics for them. Just as far as being able to deal with a team that has size, length, activity, and physicality, and they had to work through it, especially in both games against the Washington Mystics. The Mystics were defending them very well on Saturday. And then Nafisa Collier said, hey, you know what? I'd like to score the ball. And then you know what Nafisa Collier kept doing? She kept scoring the ball.
Scoring the ball. She
30 points on 13 to 16 shooting from the field. She was all over the place. And again, with the way the Lynx use Nafisa Collier, it's not like there's one way to take her away. You don't know where she's going to get the ball. You know how she's going to attack. Is it going to be from threes? Is it going to be from the post? Is it going to be a drive? That style, like I think the best compliment you can give Fee this year is she's doing what Fee does within the context of what Minnesota does, which makes it very hard to just lock in and take her away. Because at the end of the day, they're going to have five players out there that are going to move the ball, can shoot, drive, and play. And so it's not like we can just load up on Fee because we don't know when Fee's going to get the ball. But I think just a team effort. And that's the biggest thing for Minnesota, to be able to move the ball, move their bodies, to find a way to still get there against, like they ended up shooting 57% from the field and 52 from three. And they were struggling in that first quarter. But again, that's they force you to sustain defense. And I think that's the hallmark of that Lynx team, which is going to be really fun to kind of watch the Lynx and the Aces kind of do battle, as the Aces have some things on the table that can test the Lynx in a different way. And the Lynx have an offense that can test the Aces defense in a different way. So we're going to see which team is where they want to be this week.
Mm-hmm. I would just say, just on a general note, like I do kind of like the little two-game series that we're getting this year, to where we just get Lynx Mystics twice. We're going to get Aces Lynx twice. It's kind of a bit of a breakup, but like we got to see Mercury Sky twice. Like I do like seeing like seeing what kind of game plan tweaks are there when you know you're getting the same opponent for a second time in short order. Like, that's just cool to me.
You didn't like it last year?
Yeah, I'm just saying. Like, I just want to sprinkle that back in. Like, no, it's cool. You know, it's a cool setup.
No, you didn't. You know who didn't like it? Whoever had to play Connecticut twice.
Yeah, that's But then again, like, I don't know if there are many teams in the W that like playing Connecticut. Even if they have success against them, like, you know, you are in for some really tough physical and active defense. And you are going to take some drives or post-ups to the chest. And that's just not a fun time, regardless of the result. But that is cool. I would say, well, we already talked about the Dream, so I'm not going to hang here too long. I just want to see more from them. See what these next two or three games are going to look like for them. See if they're going to move up in the standings. To bounce off of the Lynx Mystics point, welcome back, Shakira Austin. It's been nice watching her fly around. There has been some fly around derogatory as she gets the sea legs back under her, particularly defensively. But watching some of the drives, the continued exploration with the jumper for her, I guess similar to Seattle, to where they'll move Neck or Ezzy around, we'll let them come off handoffs, or we'll just pitch it to them real quick, let them drive. Like, you're seeing that from Shakira as well. You're seeing the grab and go sequences from Shakira offensively. I am just excited to watch her expand her game offensively and get these reps. I think that's what the rest of the season needs to be about if you're in the Mystics. Like, just bigger picture, we need to see what Shakira can do and kind of test those limits. And so starting to get some more of those reps on film has been cool. I will say, actually, to circle back to your Sun point really quickly, the Marina debut was electric. And they moved her all over. We saw her off ball. We saw her in pick and roll. We saw some post-ups, particularly as that game went on. And, like, one of the things that I want to hop in a Sun Zoom soon. Hopefully I can get to do so sometime this week. But I honestly want to ask their post, like, what is it like having to invert in that way to post up guards? Because, like, DeWanna post up sometimes. She has a size mismatch, but it's not, like, a heavy diet. And, like, we talked about it a little bit earlier in the year where the Marina post-ups in Chicago were very good. And so I would imagine as you get more reps and more practice time, like, they'll be able to sprinkle in more of those quick seals from Marina, or just actually draw up stuff from her from time to time. And I want to see, like, just from their vantage point, like, what kind of adjustment they feel like they need to make, or how different is it, stuff like that. Like, I kind of just want to get a player perspective on something like that. But overall, like, really enjoyed the Marina debut against Dallas. It's very funny. I tweeted out the offense rating in half court, and it was immediately bombarded with, well, it is Dallas' defense. I was like, well, yeah, but the Sun don't do this that often. So I would just like to highlight how electric Connecticut's offense has been in this half so far. Like it's pretty neat. But no, excited to see what that's going to look like. I'll say on a more somber note, before bouncing back around, because as I said, I am in Vegas right now, was at Ace of Sparks. And as someone that was in the building, the booze from D'Erica Hamby, or for D'Erica Hamby rather, it was very odd. And like seeing some of the church, well, you know, opposing players get booed all the time, etc. Like, yes, they do. But like what made it different is that, just drawing on my own experience at being at Aces games, and even being at the earlier Aces Sparks game this season, like D'Erica has not gotten that. And in general, you don't hear the boo birds like that in that arena unless the refs make a call that they don't like, regardless if it's right or wrong. But it's a ref thing or opposing players at the free throw line, because the Aces run this promotion where if a player misses two consecutive free throws, or the opposing player rather, but if they miss two consecutive free throws, they get a free slice of pizza from one of the local pizza chains here. And so you get the loud boos there because they want free food, which why would you want free food, especially free pizza? And like even with opposing player intros, the way that the Aces do it, it's a very much their PA guy will just say the names of the opposing players at like 100 miles per hour. And so it was very funny being at the Liberty game in particular, to where like PA guys running through the Liberty starting lineup, and like he finishes the fifth name as like the third player in the starting lineup is like doing the daps and stuff, running through the player line. And so like you don't even get the opportunity for we're going to boo the opposing team in that regard. And so with that context, that's why it felt extra weird that every time Hamby touched the ball, it was that.
Now, wait, before you continue, I just want to give a quick shout out to the Emmy Award winning Chet Buchanan, voice of the Aces. Shout out to Chet. Salute, Vegas. Continue.
Appreciate you, Steve. But no, I guess I just want to quickly add that context, but I did. You know, see and hear some of the chatter, like, why is this a big deal, et cetera, et cetera. Opposing players get booed all the time, especially if they were a former team, whatever. And so, like, I don't want to make the argument that opposing players should never be booed and all that good stuff. Like, I just don't like it becoming that kind of disingenuous argument. Like, the context is what makes this so much different. And you could hear and feel that in the arena. And, like, with the obvious backdrop of the lawsuit right now. It was just an odd atmosphere of being there in the building. And so that was just weird. And then we got post-game stuff. I'm not going to hang in there. I'm not about to get into all that. But I did just want to quickly speak to that portion. Like that was just odd. And like, you don't like to see that, especially with that backdrop. And so like, hopefully that's not a thing that continues. And beyond that, like when we know more, we can talk about more. But that's about it on that front. That was just a weird thing to kind of witness. Quickly bouncing back to Chicago, Mikaela Anyaweda getting the start. And Buddy, her aggression, as I have a general question about three-point shooting with Chicago and the personnel. She got them up. And I think in general, like her mixing in the threes and also some of the mid-range shot creation that we saw, like, I think it's cool for her to be able to test that out. We saw flashes of that when she was in Phoenix last season. But seeing her grow on that, that's been pretty cool. With the Sparks, just another hat tip to Rekia Jackson, as so much of the Rookie of the Year conversation has rightfully gone to Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese. But Rekia has been very good. And just continuing to watch her abuse smaller players on the block has been an enjoyable and sometimes funny experience. Because what do you do with that kind of size and that kind of shooting touch inside the arc at the very least, and the footwork and the fluidity that she's able to showcase? She is just a tremendous talent. And so I did want to highlight Rekia again. Anyone else? We talked about Liberty already. I think that'll do it for me. I think that'll do it for me.
Okay. Shout out to W. I'm glad the W's back. Hey, guys, you want to play a game real quick?
Sure.
Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. Can you power rank these bigs for me?
Okay. Let me get ready to type this out. What we got?
Derek Lively.
Oh,
Jalen Duren. Nick Claxton.
You're about to lock a rant.
Nikola Vucevic and Isaiah Hartenstein and Nasri. Can you power rate those for me? Just those six bigs?
You mean the 81 and or 82 overalls on 2K? Buddy.
Well, they're all on 81. They're all on 81.
They're all 81. Man.
They're all 81s, bud.
Okay, well, first I'm going to answer your question. I just want to make sure I got the bigs. Lively, Duren, Claxton, Vooch, Nasri. Was there someone else?
I mean, the punchline's kind of ruined because the answer was just going to be they're all 81 overalls, but it's fine.
Well, my fault. Well, I guess just to rank them real quick, I would say Claxton, Reed, Lively, Vooch, and Duren right now.
Mm.
But with that being said,
you've upset a Dallas Mavericks fan somewhere. Go ahead.
Probably. It's okay. 81 overall with like 88 potential for Derek Lively. It's cool. But all five of these players being 81 overall is kind of crazy. Because I feel like what's going to happen is I'm going to open up 2K and I'm going to go to like Jalen Duren's stats and stuff. And he's going to be like a really good defender. And I'm going to lose my marbles.
There's an alternative option, which What's is since you've done this every year for the last 8 years, just accepting 2K for the great product that they are and enjoying the game. Now notice how I, Steve Jones Jr., not ever featured in the game, is the one who said that. the world to note that.
Let's get Steve Jones 20 in the social media tab for 2K.
No.
No. You've done it now. But no, in all seriousness. But no, it is still a very good game overall, and I do end up enjoying it every year. Love playing with my friends and stuff. But like the ratings thing gets me every year. And like part of enjoying the game, at least for me as a like long-term gamer, like I enjoy the franchise / my NBA / dynasty mode, depending on what the sports game is. And like that immersion is important. And if the ratings aren't where they should be, then the simulation stats aren't what they should be, or the trade value won't be what it should be. And it kind of breaks the immersion for me. So like I nitpick because of me and I nitpick, but there is like a real like application to this to where I'm like, I would like for this to be as realistic as possible because it makes it easier for me to dive in the way that I want to dive in with some of these like multi-year modes and stuff like that. And so it's just interesting to me that.
No worries. Didn't mean to unlock a rant. Who's better, D'Angelo Russell or Chris Paul?
Aren't they also 81 overalls? You know, it depends on what you need. You know what I mean? If you need a table setter, it ain't going to turn the ball over. You want some veteran leadership, you go Chris Paul. If you want more pull-up shooting, need a secondary score, so we can push and transition for you up the pace. A little bit more size. You go D-Lo. It depends on what you want.
Two thumbs up. That's all I had.
I appreciate that. Also, I guess on that vein, because I should be responsible to like pull up the chart again, because I just saw it before the pod started. Isn't Zubac and JV Valanciunas, aren't they both 82 overalls? I believe that's the bid.
Who?
Ivica Zubac and Jonas Valanciunas. I think they are both 82 overalls, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Who do you think is better between the two? Or who would you rather have?
Depends on who else is on my team. I think there's advantages for JV. There's advantages for Zubac. Mm-hmm. If you like the rebounding, the post ups, you go JV. If you want the defense, you probably lean Zubac. Mm. You cannot trick me.
No trick. I just figured I would ask. I do love that the pod just turned it into 2K talk at the end. It's a very good bit. Okay, they're releasing it's the 2K top 100 that started releasing, right?
Yes.
We got 81 through 100 that's out right now? or did it dip into the 70s? Things ain't going through 100. But excited to see what the rest of this list is going to look like. How many Celtics do we think are going to have like an 86 overall or higher?
Seven.
Boy, that would be a Sam Hauser, you. No, just kidding. All right, before we get out of here, any closing thoughts, any closing shout-outs? Anything on your mind before we close?
No.
Okay, fair enough. I will quickly say a quick shout-out to friend of the program, Monica McNutt. Got married over the weekend. Just wanted to give a quick salute there from the Dunker Spot. But beyond that, thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. Follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Follow, join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you haven't already. Fun discussions and funny tweets being shared in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. If you would like to chat along with us as we watch some W Hoop or as we put College Football 25 on screen as the online Dunker Dynasty is live, or if you want to join us for some Fall Guys or random Fortnite games or random YouTube binges of old wrestling matches as we watched Kevin Owens versus Stone Cold Steve Austin yesterday, you can come rock with us. The link to the room is in the description. It is free to create your profile. No shenanigans in terms of creating your profile. Come rock with us. Come have some fun. Really cool and inclusive community. So come rock with us. But beyond that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Man, great job, Nakai. Shout out Monica Bennett. I hope no one else that's a friend of the Dunker Spot got married this weekend.